At InDigital, we know that public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Rapid Deploy is the CAD of the future. It's cloud-aided dispatch, not dinosaur computer-aided dispatch that looks like it was built in the 1980s. Rapid Deploy's cloud-native CAD, mapping, and analytics increase situational awareness for call takers, dispatchers, and responders. Rapid Deploy is taking public safety by storm. It's fast and easy to deploy, with implementation in days, not years. It's affordable for all agencies of all sizes, rich in features, functionality, and data. It's also reliable and secure as we use Microsoft Azure Government Cloud. Go to rapiddeploy.com to learn more.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches podcast, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. I was going to say the episode number, but I didn't have it right there, so I hesitated. Oh, that is funny. That's what happens when you have a bunch of episodes that are coming up. You don't put numbers on them anymore. You just have, you know, the names of the person that you're interviewing until you start catching up and getting those numbers in there. But I am quickly approaching episode 400, and I am, oh man, the milestone right there. You know, I've been doing this since 2012. The original idea for this started in 2010, however, and so it's been going for a while. This all started as a college project, and it's been an amazing experience. So thank you all for being here, for joining us and all. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy. A big shout out to patrons. Thank you so very much for everything. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if it wasn't for all of you, and of course all of you who listen, watch, share, and support. So thank you so very much. It is July 20th right now, this will be going out in a few weeks. This is also an InDigital exclusive episode. And I say a few weeks. Actually, no, this is going out in a few days. Again, that's how many episodes I have in the can now that are going to be going out. It's just amazing stories, powerful, powerful stories. And it's just been really good. Just coming back from the Navigator Conference. We have the NENA Conference that's coming up as well in Columbus, Ohio. So there is so much on the horizon. And it's just going to keep on going and going and going throughout the entire summer into the fall. And I am just completely excited to be able to continue to do this and to be out there in person with everyone and enjoying these conferences. Of course, all the virtual stuff we've been doing as well, that is still going too. So it has been really good. I'm pumped, and I'm also excited for my guest today. We were just laughing and joking right beforehand, and it's always fun to do that right before, shake out any nerves or whatever that's going on. Cause I know I get that way as well, especially when I'm getting ready to speak at a conference. I am always just kind of on edge right before I'll be pacing back and forth. Okay, how am I going to start it out? Start it out like this. Okay, got to make sure to make this one point and then just keep going. And then right as I'm there and I've got the microphone, I can feel myself kind of shaky. But then as soon as I start talking, then it all goes away. It's kind of like a roller coaster when you're going up and you hear that tick, 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 and it's just killing you. Waiting until you teeter over, then whoosh, you're in. And it's fun. So here we go. We're about to get started. Again, like I said, I'm excited. My guest today is Mandy, and she is the communications director at Richland County Sheriff's Office out of Illinois. Hello, hello.
Hey, Ricardo. Hello.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, just kind of thinking about what I was just saying, you know, with conferences and everything coming up, I have a lot of speaking engagements, and it's funny because in high school, I used to hate going up front and being in front of everyone and talking and stuff. But as soon as I got up there and just started rattling stuff off, it was a lot of fun. Like it was my time to shine, I guess. And I was up there and I would just, you know, do whatever it was that I was doing, whether it be a poem we had to memorize or a report that we were doing. And sometimes I would just free flow and just speak. And it would always be fun. I never thought, though, however, that I would be doing it for a living, especially how it was back then in school. How are you with public speaking and stuff?
You know, this is my first time doing a podcast, so I'm going to be honest. I'm a little nervous, you know. I have a few coworkers here. They've been coaching me throughout the day, and I'm appreciative of that. But, I'm definitely a little nervous. This is a little out of our norm. We're used to being behind the headset, not out, you know, where everybody can hear us and see us. And so, and I just, you know, took a speech class probably a couple of years ago. So we had to, it was all online. So we had to record ourselves. And so I did get a little experience doing that, but, you know, this is definitely getting out of my norm. So I'm learning as we go here. So.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and it's always awesome to have a good support system, right? You got your crew there.
Yeah. And I didn't tell them until yesterday that I was doing this. So they said, mm-hmm. How long have you known you were going to do this? And I said, oh, probably a month. And they, mm-hmm. you know, they just couldn't believe I hadn't said anything. I just, you know, didn't want a big deal made out of it. So until the beginning of it. So.
Well, right. Yeah. Because, you know, if you would have told them a month ago when all of this first started happening, they probably at least once a week until right now. Did you do it already? When does it come out? When does it come out? What are you going to talk about?
Exactly. But it's nice to have the support. So I appreciate that from them.
That is awesome. So how many years have you, been at the agency?
I've been at our agency for, it'll be 22 years in January. So I pretty much started here right out of the gate, you know, working. So, I've spent most of my adult life here. So I've learned a lot of things.
Oh man. Yeah. I see that you started in 2000. I started in 2001. So, I started out in, Southwest Central Florida. I almost said Southwest Michigan. That's where I ended my time. I started my time in Florida, but, I was reading that. I was like, oh, we started around the same time. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been doing it ever since. But how did you get into it to begin with? Like, do you come from a law enforcement family, or you just kind of jumped in?
Actually, my husband, he works in public safety, and we had moved away, and we was relocating back to our community. And my sister-in-law actually had told me she had seen something in the newspaper, an article, you know, about applications being accepted. And so, you know, she was thinking about applying, but they in turn end up relocating back to her husband's hometown. So I said, hey, if you're not going to apply, you know, do you mind if I apply? And she's like, go for it. You know, I'm like, we're a small community here. I was just trying to get back, you know, get established in a good profession. And, you know, I thought, you know, why not? We've got, you know, excellent benefits and, you know, a good department. And so I went ahead and applied and came in for an interview and some testing. And unfortunately, the first time I wasn't hired. So I did get called back in a later time and was hired for that position. So been going ever since. So.
Oh, man. So you had, you know, some of that experience already, in a sense. Did you do any ride-alongs or a sit-along or anything in dispatch to kind of get more of a feel for it? Or was it just kind of listening to the radio and like, you know, this might be interesting?
You know, when I applied, I had no experience. You know, I was young. I had worked at a local grocery store and worked at a bank. That was pretty much my working history prior to applying. So I didn't have any really law enforcement experience. I kind of knew a little bit about it, but yeah, just, you know, once I, you know, accepted the position, I'm like, oh, I'm really going to have to start learning how to do this, you know, listening to the radio or the scanner and that type of thing. So, you know, that really kind of helped, you know, help me get acclimated to what I was getting ready to jump into. So.
So what was that? What was that interview process like? How about just even the interview itself? Because sometimes the interview itself can be overwhelming. Like there can be a lot that comes out of it. And I say that because one of the interviews I had before the last center that I was at, I was going for two different ones. And one of them, it was a 6-person panel that lasted almost 3 hours. And I was sitting on one side and they were all on the other side. And I remember just like being like this, like thinking, what is going on here? And, you know, the county administrator would ask a question and then each person would build onto that question and they'd be firing back and forth. I'm like, what is going on? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. So when I came in for an interview, like I said, we're a small department here, and it was with the sheriff and the communications supervisor at the time. So they just came in, interviewed me. It was pretty low key. They took me in and I did some typing testing. You know, that was really about it. So, you know, of course, that's been 20 years now. Things have, you know, changed, you know, in the 911 field all around. So, it was pretty simple. I mean, I was still nervous. I was young. I was, you know, coming into a profession that I had no idea about. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm just going to jump in there. I'm going to, you know, show what kind of person I am and just being responsible and professional. And hopefully that's going to get me somewhere here in this interview. So that's pretty much it.
So then you, at least though, going into it, you know, because there's, I know some people don't like to say it, but it is customer service stuff that, you know, we're also doing as well with people. So because, you know, you had a little bit of that experience, right? You said you worked in retail and such and all, you know, you're bringing that in. I was the same way. I had retail management experience coming in where I didn't think about it at the time. You know, the correlation between having people right up front, and especially those who were angry because they didn't get the right discount on whatever shirt they were buying, you know, that some of that actually prepared me for some of the calls that I ended up taking later on. You know, we weren't face to face. It was over the phone. It was still, you know, verbal that was going on and having to navigate it. Did you find that when you were getting started that some of those skills, you know, actually came into play?
Absolutely. I mean, we're always taught in this profession, you know, customer service is huge. You're setting the pace for that call no matter what. If you, mm-hmm. if you're having a bad day and you pick up that phone, that person on the other end is going to hear you. They're going to hear that in your voice. So I definitely think the customer service, and not only that, the responsibility, you know, like I said, I worked at the bank. You know, there was a lot of responsibility that came with that. Even being a young person, you know, a lot of the work that was required to do that. So I think that actually helped. And not only that, you know, just learning to be professional and learning how to speak with people and reason with people. And so I definitely think that those jobs did help, you know, with me moving forward in this profession.
What was it like when you were walking in for that first time? Was it overwhelming? Like, if you can explain, if you can think back, you know, what is it that you see when you walk in, so that those who are listening and watching can kind of picture as well what it is that you were seeing? Because I remember walking in the first time to the Central Dispatch, which was way bigger than the little PD that I was working in when I very first started out, and thinking, what the hell am I going to, am I going to be able to do this? Because there's a lot here.
Yes. So actually when I came for my interview, they had me actually take my typing test in the dispatch center. Oh. And our dispatch center was a 2-person position, and it was just a small little room, had filing cabinets on one side. And I just walk in, and there's the Motorola console radios that had all the buttons. And, you know, the dispatcher was working away, and I was listening and listened to her talk on the phone and the radio, and she was typing. And I thought, how on earth am I going to be able to do this? What have I got myself into? So, you know, it was just, there was a lot of talking and typing, and you know, she was listening, and I thought, you want me to know what that deputy just said, and he's given me these codes, and I thought, oh man, I have got a lot to learn here. So anyways, yeah, it was a very overwhelming first time I stepped in there. I thought, how am I going to learn to multitask and talk on the phone and listen to a 911 caller that's very upset, and then I have my responders, you know, trying to give me the information, and then I need to type all this into the computer and log it at the same time. So yes, it was very overwhelming the first time. So
it's funny to listen to you as you're explaining this, because in my head, I'm putting myself in the shoes of someone who's never seen this before, kind of trying to imagine it and see it from that point of view. And in that point of view, all I can see is you with 8 different arms, you know, like an octopus or something. Cause you know, you almost feel like that. Like, I need that many arms to be able to do everything that is going on. But you know, once we get into the thick of it and we've been there, it's like second nature, right?
Yeah. I mean, things just come second nature, and you know, you're typing away, and you're listening to the caller, and you're logging on the information, you're getting your units toned out. And now it's just, you know, when you do it for so long, it just, like you said, it's just second nature to you. So it's amazing how quick that you train your mind to do those different tasks at once. So
yeah, that and you developing that that dispatch ear, because yeah, you have to listen to everything. And, yeah, and listening to you talk about the traffic, I remember feeling the same way when I first started. Because when I first started, a lot of people do that. A lot of officers do this, but they sound like they're, you know, right over the microphone, like they're eating it. And that's how a lot of the traffic sounded to me, you know, to begin with. They're like, 108 for a proof. I'm like, 108, go ahead. And they're like, yeah, no, that's right. It was right. I was like, okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
Because it sounds almost garbled, but it's not. And yeah, the more you listen, the more you develop that dispatcher ear, the more you hear the units on the radio, the rest of the people in the room. And then when you're on the phone with someone, you can hear their entire environment that's going on as well. It is amazing what we can do when we're working, right?
Yes. And I have to add to that, you know, after, you know, working with some of the officers so long, it's, you know, you go from when you first start, you're like, I can't understand what they're saying. You know, I don't even know which officer's voice that is at this point. To going to, I know what officer is, I know which officer that is, and I can tell by his voice he is in trouble, or, you know, something serious is happening. Or so it's just really nice to be able to transition, you know, from really not knowing them to knowing, okay, I know something serious is happening. You know, I can tell in their voice when they're going on a traffic stop, or I can tell when they're out with somebody and things are getting serious. So, you know, being able to have that relationship with them is really nice, and to be able to, you know, have that ability to know that in their voices.
Yeah, and it's good, and kind of scary a little bit sometimes, right? Because yeah. when you're in radio, or not even if you're just on radio, if you're, you know, in the room, you know, the way we were set up, we had both of our main phones on one side, and then on the other side we had main radio, and then in Michigan it's called Lean, which would be, you know, NCIC and everything, where we run yeah. stuff there. And even on the other side of the room, you know, like you're saying, you develop these friendships, this camaraderie, this bond with everyone within the room, and as well as those out in the field. And you pick up on those cues or those moments where there's just a little twinge in their voice, and you know something is going down, whether it be, you know, someone, a traffic stop where someone is just being kind of disorderly a little bit, or, you know, you run the plate and you see, you know, like a warrant hit come out or something, and everyone is on alert. But it's hard to explain sometimes to people who don't know that change in voice or tone or anything like that. It can be scary.
Yeah. And that's the same way with all our responders. You know, we dispatch for police, fire, and EMS here. And, you know, if we have, you know, medics out on a call, you know, sometimes they may come over the radio and holler they need additional units and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, even in their voices, you know, when you work with these people long enough, you learn that, okay, I really know that something's happening here. We need to, you know, escalate. So that's really nice to have.
Yeah. So how long was your training? How long did the training last?
Well, it's been a while ago. I don't know that I can remember exactly how long it was. Maybe 6 weeks. You know, like I said, we're a small department, and at that time we only dispatched for the sheriff's office, and then we had, you know, our fire department, which is a little bit different now since we're consolidated. So, you know, I think maybe 6 weeks. I, you know, like I said, it's been a while. It's hard for me to remember how long the time frame was back then. But, yeah.
How did it feel when you started, you know, realizing, like, I got this? You know, I mean, I know that, okay, so really it takes about 2 to 3 years, you know, somewhere around there, maybe 3.5, where you really feel like you got it. But that moment in the beginning, though, when, you know, when you've done a call and you just kind of want to, you know, pat yourself on the back, like, oh, yeah, like that was good. Like I did good. And you feel that sense of satisfaction that you were able to not only help the person over the phone, but, you know, maybe somebody out on the road or those who were going in, you know, heading out license sirens to that call. It's just that feeling of those first few ones in the beginning where you're like, yes, I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's definitely a sense of accomplishment mm-hmm. and pride. You know, we're here to serve the public, and to know that whether it's just helping them, you know, get somebody to unlock their vehicle, or, you know, providing CPR, or, you know, anything across the board. I mean, we're here to, you know, work with our public and help them out the best that we can. And, you know, customer service, like we talked about that earlier, that's important. You know, we want to have a good rapport with our community, and we want them to know that they can reach out to us and, you know, in their time of need. And so I think just a sense of pride, and, you know, like you said, just, hey, you know, I'm so excited that I got through that first major call, or, you know, whatever the case is, you know, it's, you know, there's some calls that you don't take often, and there's a lot of calls that you take, you know, more frequently. And when you get one of those major calls and you work through it and everything works out great, it's like, oh man, you know. And being in a director's position now, you know, when I see, you know, the dispatchers out on the floor, and I hear them, you know, take a call, and, you know, they're working through CPR, and, you know, it just feels really good to be able to go out there and say, hey, you know, you did a really good job on that, you know. And I think that makes them feel good as well, and, you know, kind of builds them up and makes them feel, you know, makes them feel good.
I think what is good about that as well is the fact that you come from where they come from. So, you know, you worked your way all the way up to becoming the communications director, and to be able to go back in there as well as, you know, take a few phone calls every so often. like I said, you come from there. So that's really important. That's a big part of it as well. I know at my old center, you know, both our director and deputy director, they came from where we were at. They worked their way up, and it felt, there was that sense of pride. Like, we have two of our own up at the top. Like, that is awesome, because they know what it is that we're going through. It's not someone who just, you know, came out from somewhere else, whether it be public safety or not, you know, because they've sat there and they've taken calls, they know what it's like. So it's a lot easier to be able to go over there and talk to them, and because they understand. So I think that's awesome that you end up going out there and you tell them that it's important. You know, we don't always need to thank you, but man, that recognition every so often, it goes a long way.
Sure. Sure. And I think, you know, I think, and this is probably in all centers, you know, I think we could work on that. I know I can work on that here at our center, you know, just going out a little bit more and saying, hey, good job, and recognizing people more, because it does make them feel good. It keeps them, you know, coming back. And, you know, I know they know they're making a difference, that when somebody else recognizes that they're making a difference, you know, that's huge. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to, you know, help keep morale and that type of thing, you know, in good standings.
Do you remember your first call, or any of the earlier calls when you had first started out?
I don't know any specific that I necessarily want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I mean, we take, you know, like I said, we're a small community, so, you know, we handle a wide variety of calls. You know, obviously your first call where you're providing CPR, you know, anything that's like that, you know, those calls always remain with you. You know, and we're, like I said, we're a small community. A lot of people know, you know, everybody knows everybody. And, you know, there's a very good chance that you may be taking a call that comes from a family member or a friend. And, you know, not only do you have to remain professional during those types of calls, you kind of have to put your personal feelings aside so you can get through it and handle the situation. And then, you know, after the call's finished, if you need to step away or, you know, take a break, you know, sometimes that's what you have to do. So, you know, I've taken calls from family myself, and I know others have, you know, on the floor as well. So, you know, that's just part of what we do, but, you know, there are times where it does become personal. And, you know, we just got to take that step away to kind of recollect ourselves and after the call's over.
It's a hard thing, right? And it's a thin line that we walk sometimes when it comes to working in an area that you live in, or even, you know, grew up. So the last center that I was at, where I finished off my career, it was in the county that I grew up in. I didn't live in the county anymore because, you know, ignorance is bliss. I don't want to know everything that's going on with my neighbors. So I lived about 40, 45 minutes away. And, but the entire west side of the county that I worked in was my stomping grounds, my old stomping grounds. I grew up in that area. So there were a lot of people that I would take phone calls from my hometown or the surrounding area. And I knew them. And luckily, you know, they knew me as Rich in high school. So and family would call me Richie. So my given name is Ricardo. So if anyone ever asked my name and I said Ricardo, no one would ever know. no one ever knew. You know, I would say my name, but, you know, it was never anything other than that, because you've got that, like I was saying, that fine line where if you reveal who you are, that you know them and they know you, one of two things will happen. Either they will be completely calm and will be more forthcoming with what they're saying, or they'll clam up. And then they might not say everything that you want them to say, because now you know their business. Sure. And they're embarrassed. and it makes the call harder. So for me, I only mentioned who I was when it was family. And even then I waited until like the last possible, you know, moment, during some of those calls, because again, it could go either way. Luckily, every time I did mention who I was, my family member, whoever it was that I was talking to at the time, they would say, "Oh, Richie, I'm so glad that it's you." And then they would just like vomit, you know, everything that I wanted to know, they were letting me know, but it was because they felt comfortable with me being on the line, where, you know, if it was a friend, it might not have been that way.
And I feel like, you know, on a 911 call, an emergency situation, I mean, I've had it happen to me a few times. And as soon as I know who I'm speaking to, you know, I may identify myself, hey, and they may even know your voice if it's somebody that you know well. And yeah, they've always been very thankful. You know, I have people come to me even about calls that have happened years ago saying, hey, you know, thank you for being on the line for me. And I think they do appreciate, you know, knowing who they're talking to. Like I said, you know, being in a small community, a lot of people, we all know each other. So I think having that connection when somebody's in an emergency situation, I think that makes them feel good and, mm-hmm, you know that they have, you know, somebody that they know on that other line.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've had people ask me before, you know, what does it take to be an 911 dispatcher, a call taker? And I've told them, you know, basically just a few things, some thick skin, common sense, and, you know, your ability to just be human.
Sure.
You know, all the other stuff you learn, and of course there's training and, you know, everything else that ends up coming with it, and a lot more now than when you and I started, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Technology has taken us a lot of places and provided us a lot of great tools, you know, that we can use now, which, you know, all that requires training. So we're thankful for it, but, you know, in the end, it just requires a little more training and continued training to keep up, mm-hmm, with that technology. So,
yeah, there is so much that has changed since the beginning, especially, you know, when you talk about, you know, mental health and wellness and stuff. I remember when I first started, in the 40-hour training class that I had, we didn't really talk about how to take care of ourselves. It was more, you know, these are different techniques you can use. There's this and this. Sure. I mean, I do remember them saying, you know, you just, if you have to step away, step away. But there was never really a lot of talk about, look, this might affect you this way, or this might impact you this way. If you start seeing that you think you're leaving it at work, but you're at home and you're silent, you're not leaving it at work. you're still bringing it home in silence. Like, none of that was talked about. And I'm just so thankful now that, you know, from probably about 2016 until now, the conversation is out there. We're actually doing more about talking about it instead of that fear of looking weak. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's, I was one of those who buried my calls, and I didn't want to be the person to ask for help or say something, because I didn't want people to be like, oh, he can't hack it. But come to find out, that was a stupid way of thinking, because I needed to ask. I needed to talk to people. And when I finally did, it helped. And that's kind of what, you know, spun all of this as well that we're doing now. So
absolutely. I remember when you first started it coming out, would you say 2010?
Yeah.
And I'm like, who is this Ricardo guy? I mean, this is pretty neat. You know, we've got somebody that's, you know, starting to see, you know, what's happening in this profession and recognizing it. And so, you know, we're thankful for you to, you know, to allow dispatchers to share their stories and, you know, talk to others. And, you know, sometimes I think that's part of the healing process is, you know, being able to communicate with others that do the same thing. I mean, you can go home and try to explain to a family member, but until they're in that hot seat and they're handling that call, it's very difficult for them to understand, you know, what type of toll it takes on your body.
Right. Yeah. And thank you so much for those words. I appreciate it more than, you know, I do know what you mean, though, when you start talking to a family member or a friend, because I remember a couple of times where I don't know what it was that triggered whatever story it was. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but I remember telling one of my siblings, and when I was done telling the story, I turned around to look at them because we were driving, and there's just, it was just this look. And I remember thinking, and well, telling them as well, asking, like, did I say too much? Like, I don't know what happened.
and before I stepped in this profession, I was oblivious. I had no idea the things that, you were going to encounter, the things that you were going to hear. It's just definitely an adaption. And I think, as time goes on and the years pass, like you said, with the mental health, people are becoming more aware and, they're not afraid to speak up and, hey, I really do need help. And, I think that's huge for our profession, that it's being recognized and people are able to get assistance that they need for it. Because, that's so important to be able to come back and continue to do the job. We've got to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's a lot that, that goes into this. And, sometimes we get in our own heads. And yesterday I was chatting with someone and, we were talking about how we're our own worst critic. And, sometimes it can impact some of those calls, maybe after the call. Actually is because I, and one of the ones that I talked about was, it was 2 weeks, my last 2 weeks in my dispatching career. And it seemed like the dispatch gods were sending every crap call to me and like, you're going to go out. Well, you're going to go out like this way. You're going to go out raw. we're going to take you down. And, there was one call that, that will always stick with me that I overanalyzed, and I was criticizing my own work to the point where I was like mapping out how far this car was from where they ended up crashing, and the person ended up committing suicide. But if I had changed my questioning, because it started out as a disorderly call, but it was at the very, very end that the person said, I think the person might be suicidal as well. And right away I'm thinking, that would have been like number one for you to mention, because that completely changes everything.
Absolutely.
And, but after that, it took about 30 minutes of me over criticizing and over analyzing what I was doing that I just finally realized there's nothing I could do. By the time I was able to even call this person, they were already into the tree and there was nothing I could do. And that sucks, because we want to help people. We want to do everything that we can. And then when it doesn't happen, that's when we start beating ourselves up, and it sucks.
Absolutely. I think it happens more than you probably know.
Yeah, for sure. So you go through your career and all, and did you go straight from dispatch call taker to communications director, or did you go to training officer or move up, or just how was that transition?
No, actually, we consolidated our dispatching. And at that point, that's when, I became the director, kind of during that. It was kind of after the consolidation, well, a little before the consolidation process. And then we consolidated and I remained in that position. So yeah, I mean, basically going from the floor to director. So it was definitely a learning curve. And I'm still learning every day. So,
Did you have any of those moments where, your coworkers were now saying, you're dead to us, you're on the other side? I say that jokingly. Well, anybody listening or watching, I say it jokingly only because I have seen on social media where where someone has become a training officer or supervisor or deputy director, whichever, and they'll make like a cake and it'll say, you're dead to us.
Yeah, I think I've probably seen that. I mean, we have a good group here. We have a great team, and, like I said, we're with being a small community, we all try to work well with one another. And, you know, obviously there's times where the supervisor's not the most popular person. You know, sometimes there's got to be decisions made and, mm-hmm. you know, people want to know why. And, you know, so I think sometimes, you know, being in that dispatch position and then going into director, sometimes that can be a little challenging. You know, you were one of them and now you're seen as somebody a little different. And, you know, just adapting to that can be a little different and challenging. But like I said, we have a great group here and we have a lot of hard workers. So, you know, we all sit out and joke with one another and, you know, try to keep things light sometimes. You know, we get major things going on. It's like, okay, we just need a little breather and, you know, sit down and talk. And we're just a small family here. So.
I think it's good also, you know, as you were making the transition and where you are at now, the fact that you, well, one, as we already established, you know, you coming from where they come from, but also, you know, you going back out there, checking on them, you know, sitting in sometimes and still being able to do the job and all, because that, I mean, that credibility goes for miles. Like that is a good thing, you know, to be able to do that, especially if someone has to run out for a moment. You know, just for example, someone has taken a pretty hard call. Sure. And, you know, not all places have someone who's also trained that is in a position like your own who can come in and say, hey, I know that was a shit call. Go ahead and go out for a couple, you know, minutes or whatever. Kind of gather yourself and then come back in. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, sit your station and you just keep going and going. And it, you know, just runs like a well-oiled machine.
Sure. And I think it helps you identify, you know, maybe there's issues with, you know, a specific program that isn't working or, you know, just the technology of things, you know, they can tell you about things, you know, hey, we're having trouble with this and we're having trouble with that. But until you're sitting there and you're actually trying to use it and it's giving you trouble, you know, it just kind of helps you understand more, okay, this program or the software that they're using is important and we need to make sure that we're keeping things up and functioning for them so they can have the tools they need to handle their calls. So I think that's definitely an asset to going out there and working and just, you know, keeping the camaraderie going, you know. Sometimes they probably may want to say, hey, we've got it. Just go back to your office.
Right. Get back in there, Mama Bear.
And sometimes I may be a little overboard, but, you know, I just want them to know that I'm here to help out. And, you know, I don't want to leave them hanging. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, the biggest reasoning behind it. So I want them to know that I have their backs if they need it.
See, and that's key right there, is them knowing that you have their back, their support, all of that. That is amazing. That is really good right there to hear that. Because, you know, a lot of places, you know, there are places out there where they don't have that type of support. And, you know, if you're hiring and people are listening and watching, you might get some people to go over there, too, because they want something like that, you know? Not that we're trying to take anybody from anyone. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying.
But, you know, I feel like everybody has ways that they can improve. And, mm-hmm. you know, every center, I'm sure, has their own things that they can work on. And we do, too. You know, we just keep moving forward and pushing through and trying to make things. We just did a dispatch renovation. We just completely renovated our center. So, you know, that was a huge project for us and something that we're very, very proud of. So, you know, just trying to find things that we can invest in our team, you know, and give them a better work environment. And, you know, that's just what we're doing. We're looking for ways to continually improve things and make things good for them. So, but yeah, everybody has things that they can improve on. So,
yeah, I saw that you had done some renovations and such, but also that you've also gone from the EMD flip cards to now the ProQA. Yeah. And I remember when I read that, I thought, yep, I still sometimes, because I'm getting older, I'm an old man. No, I will sometimes, like if something is going on, I'll start going, okay, The early bird catches the worm. Okay. No, nope, I didn't slur. Nope. I sound fine.
Giving yourself a diagnostic.
Yes. I will sometimes, like in my head, I will do like flip cards. Like, yep. No. Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm good.
So EMD to ProQA was definitely a transition for us and mm-hmm. a learning curve. And, you know, we our 911 manager, she's, you know, on site here as well. And she was very instrumental in helping us, you know, with the renovation, getting that pushed through. And also, you know, all the other, you know, changes that we're making. So, you know, change is hard sometimes, but if you look at the big picture of it, you know, sometimes it's hard, you know, oh, we're having to move to another area and, you know, all the work that you put into it. But, you know, in the end, I mean, it's a beautiful center. We're so proud of it. So, and I don't think I had any complaints. Everybody was very receptive and, you know, we're grateful for that. So, you know, being in this line of work, you've got to be flexible and, you know, be able to make change. And they've done that with grace. So I am proud of them. Like I said, the ProQA, yeah, that was definitely a learning curve for us. So I think we're doing a lot better now. But yeah, it definitely was a challenge for us. But we're thankful we've gotten through it. And, you know, change is change. And sometimes it's hard for us. So,
well, on the topic of change, from your time in the beginning till now, how has technology changed?
Oh, wow. So
like, that's a loaded question.
You were talking about your NCIC system earlier. When I started, we had one terminal and we shared that. So we had, you know, we would have two dispatchers on at a time, you know, during peak hours, a lot of the times. And so one of us would try to be entering a warrant and then, you know, it was the old DOS system. So the officer would go on a traffic stop and we would have to start completely over. So one of the things, you know, now everybody has, you know, that at their fingertips at each workstation. So, you know, that's one of the big changes. And, you know, cell phone 911 calls were phase zero. Then they came to our administrative line. So, now we're getting phase two calls. They're plotting on our map. We have rapid SOS, which is a huge tool that we use that we're so thankful for. So we depend on that a lot. So there's just been a lot of, you know, when I started here, we didn't do the EMD flip cards. We hadn't even been certified yet until probably 8 months into the job. Mm-hmm. We started doing that. So, you know, you're depending on your CPR skills that you've learned in your training and, you know, just try to do the best you could do based off your knowledge that you had. And so we have came a long ways, I believe, here and in our profession all around, you know, for the level of service we're providing our citizens. So it's just huge. Technology has definitely, you know, made things, I want to say, a lot easier, but, you know, just a lot of tools that are now at our fingertips that help us. So
are you doing texting as well?
We are not. We have the capability, but we are not currently doing the texting. I think that's something that's probably in the works in the future.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. The texting, and the only reason I ask about that is because, you know, we were talking about how, you know, some people don't like change and all, and I was just going to share a story with you really quick where, I was in West Virginia, out in, Charleston, it's Kanawha County. And I was out there with a coworker and we were training all of their dispatchers and call takers on how to use the texting platform that they were going to be using. And I remember someone saying, "Ricardo, nobody likes change." And I said, "I know." I said, it'll be okay, man. It'll be all right, you know. And he goes, "Well, it's not the, you know, the newer ones that are coming in. It's more of the seasoned ones that I'm afraid that they really won't want to do this." And I said, "Well, you might be surprised. You might be surprised." And it was amazing because the more seasoned ones, the ones that were actually almost close to retirement as well, some of them were the ones that were loving it the most. Like they kept testing and testing and testing, and they were laughing and they were just having a good ass time. And the ones that he wasn't worried about were the ones who were like, I don't know about this. So I get jealous sometimes as well when I see, you know, all of this new technology, because it's awesome to see it coming in. But I think, man, I want to use that. I wish I would have had that. I want to try it, but you know, I'm not there.
You know, when I started here, you know, we had, you know, the old consoles that, you know, things fit in little holes, you know, the monitors and stuff fit in certain holes, and, you know, it was just kind of one big piece of equipment. And now, you know, with our renovation, you know, we have the capability to stand or sit at our positions and, you know, have the heating and air. So, you know, in that aspect too, it's just, you know, changed a lot as well. So we're pretty thankful for that. So change isn't always bad.
Very true. Cause we had consoles that also, moved up and down, and we could stand and such. And, you know, we could put on like the white noise or something if we wanted to block everything else out, which didn't always work, but it was cool to say that we had it. But there were many other things there, but the one thing that always seemed the same was our chair graveyard. We had about 30 chairs there, but
everybody wants their own.
Yes. Or the same one, that looks like it's been, you know, just burned, and, you know, the armrests are like ripped up and bitten. The one that looks like has gone through the most hell is the one that everybody wanted for whatever reason.
Yeah. We had one that had broke off the base a few times, and it's like, okay. With our renovation, you know, we were afforded the ability to get new chairs. And so it's like, okay, we've got to, you know, put this one to bed. It's time to get rid of it. So anyways, yeah.
That's always new. Right. But there's someone always will find it, right? They'll end up finding it, and it'll somehow will end up back in. That happened to us. Yeah. I remember walking by and said, what the hell is this? Like, I thought this chair got thrown in the garbage. You didn't see anything, Ricardo. I was like, okay, I'll keep my mouth shut then.
Yeah, we definitely have our chairs that we are favorites. So, yeah.
You know, I did want to ask, as we were talking about, and we're getting close to the wrap up here, this episode as well. It's been awesome to have you on. But going into... you know, this change, this new position when you were going in for the communications director, what was the motivation? What was the inspiration there was there something that just kind of, you know, maybe something in your past, whether it have been during training or a certain call, or was there any sense of, you know, I want to do this because I want to make change, but two, you know, I want to kind of mold this next generation that's coming into the center as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just I have a passion for helping people, and really, honestly, training's always been close to my heart. You know, I like going out and talking to people and explaining things, and, you know, how to, you know, to work a certain program or technology, or, you know, that's always been kind of close to me. So, you know, the opportunity came, and, you know, like you said, being able to mold some of the newer people, you know, there's going to come a point in time where it's my time to move on and retire. And you want to make sure that, you know, what you have continues to move forward, and you want to, you know, empower those that are still here to, you know, continue to move that on. So, yeah, just, you know, like you said, just molding those around you and hoping that, you know, they can keep things moving along eventually down the road. So,
as we go into the wrap up of this episode now, when you think back and reflect on this career, I guess, what is something that you're grateful for, and any advice for anyone who is looking to get into dispatching as well?
I mean, just grateful to be able to be there when that person calls and they're needing help. You know, you can be that calm voice, and, you know, it's it's a sense of giving back to your community, you know, being a public servant and, you know, like I said, just helping people when they're in need. I have a heart to help others, I feel like, and not just in my personal life, but or in my work life as well. And, you know, just being kind and passionate to people and trying to help them through situations that are tough. I mean, we all go through tough times, and it's nice to have another voice on the other end of the phone to, you know, help people get through things. And, you know, like I said, we're small here. So you may be helping somebody, you know, it may be one of your friends, or it may be a family member, or, you know, somebody that you met at the grocery store. Or so I just think a sense of, you know, serving our community is huge.
And for anyone who's thinking about, you know, possibly getting into this profession as well, what are some words that you might have for someone who's listening to this, you know, listening to your story or any other stories that come out?
You know, it takes a lot of patience, and you have to have a heart to serve. You have to want to be willing to help people, in this type of work. You know, multitasking, you know, a lot of what we do depends on multitasking. And if you're not a multitasker, this may not be the position for you.
Right. Yeah.
you know, and just, being able to provide, you know, the customer service to people, and, you know, helping to keep things from escalating, and, you know, trying to handle calls so, you know, so we can get through it and, you know, not have people yelling and screaming by the time you hang up with them. So, yeah, just patience, multitasking, you know, having a heart to serve.
Perfect. Thank you, Mandy, so much for being on this episode, for sharing your story, and, you know, going back and forth into memory lane. it's always good, you know, to talk to someone who just, you know, the passion, I can hear it in your voice. I can see it as you're talking about it, that this is just something that you love to do. So thank you for what you do, and, to your crew, and, for being on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricardo, and thank you, and Digital, for, you know, reaching out to us and giving us opportunity as well. We appreciate all you guys are doing for our profession.
Awesome. Thank you so much once again, and I will be right back here with you. For those who are watching, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that is going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, that is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook, that is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, but this has been an InDigital exclusive. If you're looking for any bonus content, you can check us out and help support what we do at patreon.com/WTT podcast. Audio versions of the Dispatchers Roundtable as well as Open Mic Live are patron exclusives. Those are perks that they get there. And there's also swag, t-shirts, discounts at the store, a bunch of other things, as well as singing badly in my car. And more of those are coming up here pretty soon. I've got some special editions coming up. So again, that is patreon.com/WTT podcast. This can be seen on Facebook, Twitter, as well as YouTube, and can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.